The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Baseball in full swing, basketball playoffs, hockey playoffs. I'm going to call a couple of my buddies. We're going to call my buddy House a little bit later, talk Caps Bees and this violent hockey playoffs. But first, our buddy Jacko, diehard Yankee fan, probably delighting in the Bobby V saga that just won't seem to end. Let's give him a call at work right now.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Johnny!
What's up, buddy?
Patriots Day baseball going on today.
I know, it's a big day. I can't talk for very long because I have a WNBA draft party that I'm hosting shortly.
Who's going to be the first pick? Who's the first pick? I'm not following.
I don't know. I'll have to let you know. I've got so many different draft boards and mock drafts, I can't keep it all straight.
Are you doing it at Gino Auriemma's house or your house?
We're going to Gino Auriemma's restaurant, actually.
We're going to make podcast history today, Johnny. We are taping this. It is 1:20 on the East Coast. The Red Sox are playing Tampa right now.
Yes, indeed.
And now that I have this this MLB at Bat application, I can actually watch the Red Sox game as we're doing the podcast.
That's
like
exciting.
Making history here. Yeah, it'll be good. I can watch the this will be a 3-0 final, I'm guessing. But
that's your pick. It's 1-0.
Yeah, we're down
right now.
It's 7th inning. They're down 1-0 now. The bullpen will probably give up 2 more runs. I'm going to say 3-0 final. It was too hard. The Rays are too good to sweep the Rays. I'd be surprised if they swept the Rays anyway.
This is the reverse jinx in action, live and in person here. This is good to see.
I'm giving you your chance to gloat here because you were predicting a Bobby V disaster from the get-go.
I was.
It looks like it has taken – I mean, literally, we did not get to Patriots Day without without a blow up. How much are you enjoying this?
I mean, anybody who's ever watched a baseball game or is familiar with Bobby V and is familiar with the atmosphere in Boston knew that this was going to happen. But I must say, even to me, this one is especially mystifying, incredibly mystifying because, I mean, the Red Sox came home. They were 1-5. Everybody's jumping off the Tobin Bridge, to use the old cliche. The media can't wait to bury them. And then they run off 3 impressive victories at home against the Rays, who are widely regarded as a good team. They're on a hot streak. Everybody's back on the bandwagon and loving life. And Bobby V, completely unprovoked, decides to throw Kevin Youkilis under the bus. Where he probably deserved to be thrown last week, but I think he actually got a couple of hits this weekend or walks, or I know I saw some highlights where he was scoring a run, so I think he was playing better this weekend.
Yes.
And then to throw him under the bus unprovoked and create a controversy where none existed and there was no need for one is really just mystifying.
Yeah. He maybe could have said this stuff 4 or 5 days ago because, you know,
when Youkilis was like 0-for-16 or whatever he was.
But he looks sluggish, too.
Yeah.
Like, it you know, and that's the irony of these Bobby V comments is that, you know, he technically wasn't that far off base. It's not like this was like this random character. Like, where did this come from? Like if Doc Rivers suddenly attacked Avery Bradley or something. Like, what are you doing, Doc? So Yuke's definitely looks like he was in slow motion, but he was coming around a little bit. This goes back to my theory, though, Johnny. Everyone was worried about Bobby V undermining the Red Sox season and all this stuff, and I'm looking at it the opposite way. I think he gives everybody in the team a common sense of unity. They're all going to hate him. It'll bond them together.
Well, that could be it. I mean, that could be his strategy because, you know, Pedroia came out and threw Bobby V back under the bus and defended Youkilis. And Youkilis, I think, by all accounts, is a very unpopular Red Sox because he used to pick on Jacoby Ellsbury, and he's sort of mean-spirited in the clubhouse, takes jokes a little too far. So he's always there's always sort of underpinnings that he's not the most popular guy. So for
right.
the former teacher's pet, P.E.D. Roya, to come out and defend Youkilis, and go after Bobby V. It's true. They may be unified as we all hate that SOB in the manager's office. So let's just go, you know, use your anger out in the field, take it out on the other team.
I'm going to use the a movie analogy, something new and different. Tom Berenger in Platoon.
Yes.
Kind of united the troops. He was such a jerk that they all fought their war a little bit harder. Maybe mm-hmm. that's what's going to happen here at the 2012 Red Sox.
That makes Terry Francona Willem Dafoe.
He's going to die holding his arms out like a cross.
He kind of did, really, last season. Yeah. So it really it's a fitting analogy.
Well, it'll be interesting, assuming this just gets worse and worse and he eventually gets fired, how the Red Sox front office handles their annual smear campaign.
Yeah.
usually they smear people on the way out their door that the fans like. And this time around,
the fans
are already turning.
Yeah, they may join in the smearing. Yeah, it'll be interesting. They already went with like the womanizing and pill popping for Terry Francona. I don't know what's left for them to use with Bobby V. Maybe some financial improprieties or something.
Shady
expense reports, that type of thing.
Hitting on a clubhouse attendant.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, we just had an awesome watching on the iPad. Just third baseman going in for a pop fly on Tampa and just knocked beers all over two drunk guys.
Oh,
so it was good.
And those
kinda
beers were probably about $15 each too. You hate to see that.
Yeah, Patriots Day. Probably one of my top six favorite things about Massachusetts and the thing that I miss the most.
I remember we were in college and your father used to have a house right along the route in Wellesley.
Yeah, yeah.
And we went and tailgated the marathon sitting there drinking beers while people ran 26 miles.
What was better? Nothing, I said.
No, it was fantastic.
It was great. It does make you think that every state should have its own little holiday that has some sort of hook.
I'm not opposed to any holiday that requires you to start drinking early in the morning. I'm in favor of more of those.
I figured you would be.
The more the merrier.
Yeah, because you think like, this is Kevin Wilds and I were talking about this with Half Baked Ideas about whether we need like a holiday czar, somebody really figure out the holiday thing once and for all. Do we have the right holiday? It's like, do you need a Labor Day anymore? Does Labor Day mean as much in 2012 as it did in the 1940s, things like that. And you could make a case that every state could have its own holiday that would be, you know, specially themed toward them, and it wouldn't matter what Monday it was. What would Connecticut's be?
Well,
would it be UConn basketball day?
Yeah, probably. The year UConn went 39-0, whatever the anniversary of that is, sometime in April. I was reading about Patriots Day today, and the only two states where everybody has a day off are Massachusetts and Maine for some reason.
Maine?
Yeah,
what is
Maine. Now, I don't know. Lexington and Concord both took place in Massachusetts. I don't know how Maine got in the bandwagon, but it kind of bummed me out that Connecticut didn't hop in as another member of the New England states.
Hmm.
Massachusetts and Maine with the day off.
That's weird. Is Cinco de Mayo, that's not an official holiday, right?
No, I don't believe so, no.
But not even like kind of casual. Like, I feel like in California,
maybe
Cinco
in
de Mayo is like people just kind of take it off.
Yeah, probably. Well, it's, you know, it's May. It's always nice in California, but the rest of the country is sort of is starting to be warmer and an excuse to drink Corona and then drink tequila, and it's people taking advantage of that.
The only problem with Cinco de Mayo is you'd have another holiday a couple weeks later, Memorial Day.
Yeah,
basically two May holidays, and we don't totally need May holidays either because
exactly.
The weather's nice. But you know, you think like the beauty of Patriots Day is it's right kind of in that nook.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it's usually third week of Monday or third Monday of April. It's right, you know, you still have Memorial Day is like 6 weeks away. The February holidays have happened a few. You know, it's a night. It kind of fits that buffer.
Yeah, it's definitely a good one, and it gives the Red Sox a crazy, weird advantage to host a baseball game at 11 o'clock in the morning. I mean,
yeah,
they get to sleep in their own bed. It's kind of like the Cowboys and the Lions playing on Thanksgiving Day when they're used to it.
Yeah.
And opposing teams have to gear up in 4 days to play a game that they're not used to. It's got to be so weird for teams to play at 11 o'clock in the morning.
This goes, you know, you always say, somebody just got thrown out to end the inning in the seventh. Not great. This goes back to your theory about how Bud Selig is in bed with the Red Sox.
Totally.
If he was in bed with the Red Sox, they would schedule a West Coast team for every Patriots day.
Well, I think they did last year.
Monday game.
We may have talked about this before. Maybe I talked about it with somebody else, but it was the Angels, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're right.
It was like 8 o'clock in the morning for them.
Yeah, that's what we need, Johnny.
These guys are usually getting in at 8 o'clock in the morning, not getting up to play baseball.
Did you have a reaction to the Jacoby Ellsbury probably out for 8 weeks, but once the Red Sox medical staff gets involved,
yeah,
it could be another 8 years?
Well, I mean, of all guys to have it happen to after his rib thing a couple of years ago,
yeah,
my first reaction was, obviously you hate to see a guy get hurt, but I knew Red Sox fans would be secretly pleased because it now gives them an excuse when they come in fourth place. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to whine and say, well, if only we had Ellsbury for those 3 months. And, I mean, he had the whole thing with the ribs where the Red Sox were, the medical staff were like, oh, it's fine, don't worry about it, it's the bruise, it's okay. Meanwhile, he had like 5 broken ribs and a collapsed lung or whatever, you know. So I'm like,
kidney damage.
If I'm Jacoby Ellsbury, I'm getting a second, third, and fourth opinion probably on my shoulder.
I wouldn't let the Red Sox medical staff diagnose a fever for one of my children.
A splinter.
I wouldn't let them look at a lump on my dog's back. Seriously, though, they said 8 weeks, and every Red Sox fan had the same reaction. Like, oh, man, that once our medical staff gets involved.
Yeah, he's out for the year.
Yeah, it's just not good. But you're right. I mean, I'm sure there is now an excuse built in. I would argue the other way. I think now that this removes the pressure.
Yeah, because
now it's
money.
Like. Yeah, now it's like, we're a 500 team. Oh, hey, we beat the Rays a couple times. Now it's like the season. Now you got Cody Ross is getting involved. You got the other known it. We have somebody who was hitting like 235 in Pawtucket they brought up.
Yeah.
Not Jeremy Lin, his brother.
No, I think they got rid of him. I think he was up and they sent him back down now.
I know. I was excited, though, to have the guy there was an article about him that my friend Hench forwarded, and it was like, the guy had toiled away in the minors, but had raised his average to 235 in Pawtucket. It's like, oh.
There you go.
There it is.
He's right there with Iglesias, the other great superstar of the future who's sitting around that at Pawtucket, I think.
Well, you know, Johnny, here's the thing with the Sox. When you're a small market team, there's a guy like Ellsbury. It's so tough to rally.
Absolutely, yeah. You just don't have the resources to compete with the big boys.
Do you know that the Red Sox have more money being paid right now to disabled list guys than like 10 major league teams?
I did. I saw that. Yeah, because Crawford and Lackey and Dice K. I did see that. They have like $60 million.
Well, now Ellsbury,
on the deal.
Too. Yeah, it's like at $65 million or something now.
Yeah.
Pretty
crazy.
Tell us about the Yankee season.
Kind of tripped out of the gate, stumbled, the same April foibles that they always have. And, turned it around against Baltimore, which is really the antidote to any of your problems as a Major League Baseball team, which was good, and came home and looked okay against the Angels, except for Phil Hughes, who gives up way, way too many home runs. I watched some of the game on Saturday on Fox intermittently in between doing yard work and things, and his velocity was not great. It was like a little over 90 and just fat pitches over the plate that the Angels enjoyed hammering out of the park. So
can we go back to you doing yard work?
What's that?
Can we go back to you doing yard work?
Of course, sure.
So, what did this entail?
Well, we had a big storm back in the fall, and I live in sort of a woodsy area, and so we had a lot of trees and branches that we sort of scooped up off the lawn. We had some trees cut down, but there was still like brush, and I was like George Bush at his ranch cleaning up brush.
Is there video of this? I think it's a video of this.
No, there was me. I was operating a chainsaw and everything. It was exciting.
Wow.
And I still have all of my fingers and toes, so that's good.
I saw some Angels-Yankees over the weekend. And the Angels just have all the makings of the classic, a little too much hype. They just, something feels wrong about them, and I don't know. I can't put my finger on it.
It's unbelievable. They're like, aren't they like 3-7 now, I think?
Something like that.
They have a terrible record, and they haven't really looked good at all. Pujols is the longest drought of his career with no home runs.
Pretty interesting.
Maybe it was a little too comfortable for him in St. Louis, and now the bright lights in the big city, not so good for him.
They had it all lined up, like to steal baseball away from the Dodgers in L.A., basically.
Right.
And, you know, in the short span of like 2 or 3 weeks, all of a sudden you had the Dodgers just suddenly and inexplicably got sold to Magic.
Yeah.
Who probably owns as much of the Dodgers as we do, but
I was gonna say, wasn't there some problem with that? Because it turns out that they offered $2 billion and that none of them have $2 billion.
Yeah, that's usually a problem when that happens.
Of course, you know who did that too was George Steinbrenner.
Well, and Frank McCourt. The irony of that whole thing is that if it turns out they don't have quite the money that that they say they had, this is exactly what happened with McCourt 6 years ago, 7 years ago, whatever. But so the Dodgers get sold, everybody gets excited about that. Then the Dodgers come out, they had an easy schedule, but kind of exciting. They had that Flash Gordon's son, it's got people fired up, a couple good pitchers. And meanwhile, the Angels go in the tank. So it was like the Angels kind of missed their window there to grab the city, it felt like.
I just love to hear you talk about these Los Angeles sports teams. It's amazing. I mean, your kids are going to grow up in a world where they don't even realize that you were a Boston sports fan at one point.
That's not true because
between
I make
them tweets about the Clippers and the LA Kings. It's really, I don't care. I don't care for Boston sports. It doesn't matter to me, but
yeah,
it's got to be painful for your father and your family just to see what you've become.
Well, my kid, I force my kids to wear Boston clothes all the time, if that's any consolation. They don't know why they're wearing it. It's a tough sell to sell the Boston teams when they live 3,000 miles away.
So of course.
We had to make some rules. Well, here's the good thing. She hates the Lakers. I at least won that battle.
So
I conditioned her to just really despise the Lakers to the point of it's actually kind of comical. She knows not to root for any of the New York teams. She knows that she has to root for the Red Sox, Patriots, and Celtics in some form. But the Kings, you just kind of pushed out the Bruins. I couldn't stop it.
Once the kid meets the mascot for the team, it's over. You're not bringing
well, the
it back
other thing
from
is,
that.
She had a favorite player initially. It was like, I wrote about it, but it was the whole kid thing where they find out who the best player is and that becomes the kids are front runners.
Yeah.
Kids just jump. It's the same reason you're a Yankee fan. kids just gravitate toward whoever is doing well and they want to be attached to it. So Kopitar was the best king. She's in on Kopitar. By the way, he got jumped last night in a fight. She's very upset. This guy Burroughs on Vancouver was mad that somebody had cheap shotted one of the Sedin sisters and jumped Kopitar, who had never like been in a fight in his life. My daughter was just furious about it. But here's the thing. You can't tell your kids really what to do other than what not to do.
No, in absolutely.
I told my daughter, no Lakers, no New York teams.
Well, as long as she heeds to that, I guess that's okay then.
Yeah.
And the Kings are up 3-0 now, right?
It's pretty amazing. With an inferior team. They just it's classic
Vancouver,
to have a better goalie.
At least
they have
Vancouver
better goalie.
Can get the rioting out of the way early this year, so maybe it's a little too cold to riot up there now, so maybe it's a good thing.
Have you accepted hockey back in your life after the Hartford thing or not?
No, you know, my wife and I were big fans of the 24/7 the Rangers Flyers, you know.
Mm.
So we watched that, and we were into it, and my wife said we should go see a Rangers game. And so I'm like, you know, I like the Yankees. I like the Giants. Maybe it would be natural for me to root for the Rangers. I'm kind of a hockey orphan. So I got tickets, and we went down to Madison Square Garden for a Rangers-Capitals game in February. And it was fun and all, but I don't know. I just didn't really feel that into it. I just couldn't – I can't really become a Rangers fan at this point in my life. I couldn't do it. It's a natural thing. Their minor league team plays here in Hartford, but I just couldn't do it.
What's the minor league team?
That would be the Connecticut Whale, formerly the Hartford Wolfpack.
Connecticut Whale?
Well, this guy, Howard Baldwin, who was the original...
Connecticut Whale?
Well, here's why. Because the guy who was the original owner of the Whalers in the 1970s, Howard Baldwin, he later owned the Pittsburgh Penguins. He got back into Hartford, and his goal is to bring NHL hockey back to Hartford someday. So the Hartford Wolfpack that have been in existence since the 90s, I guess, since after the Whalers left, were the minor league team for the Rangers, and all their colors were the red, white, blue, and gray of the Rangers, and nobody would go see them, and their attendance was okay, but not great. So his thing was there was a lot of bitterness because Whaler fans didn't want to hop on the bandwagon of another team, and so he bought the team or somehow got involved in running the team and said what we needed to do was bring back the Whalers logo and colors. But the Whalers logo, I think, is owned by the Carolina Hurricanes, so they couldn't be the Connecticut Whalers or the Hartford Whalers, so they became the Connecticut Whale, and they have the green and blue of the Whalers. I don't think it's done much for attendance, quite frankly, but...
This is so sad, Johnny.
Oh, it's pathetic. It worked in Baltimore with the Colts, though, because there was a Baltimore Colts USFL franchise, I believe, or some maybe Canadian Football League team in Baltimore they called the Colts, and they got the Ravens back, so who knows? Hope springs eternal.
What are the odds that Hartford gets hockey back? I'm going to say 200-1.
Oh, it's higher than that. It's worse than that because, you know, there's teams that are on the brink of moving, like the Islanders, because they couldn't get a deal in Nassau, and the Phoenix Coyotes, I think, are always rumored to move, and all these warm weather cities where it hasn't really worked out. And, you know, Winnipeg got a team back, and Quebec City apparently is just built some new arena, and they're rumored to get a team back who would probably become the Nordiques.
I'd love to see that.
But the Whalers Hartford is never mentioned as a potential, you know, venue for a new team to come in. So
I have an idea about this. Tell me if you like this idea. So, you know, ESPN makes a ton of money.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew this. It's a very successful company. Arguably one of the most successful companies of the last 30 years. So, you know, what would it cost to buy the Islanders? $150
million? I'm not even sure it would be that high. $100 would probably do it.
$100, drop in the bucket, right?
Sure.
What would it cost to build a new arena in downtown Hartford?
A couple hundred.
All right, so now we're up to like maybe $400 total. Call it the ESPN Dome?
Yeah.
Something like that?
They couldn't do it as a sports network. I mean, the thing to do it would be...
Not done, Johnny.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm not even close to being done.
I'm sorry.
You bring the Islanders to Hartford. You change their name. You call it the Hartford ESPNs. They play in the ESPN Dome. And then the NBC Sports Network and NBC, who has, you know, they paid all this money for the hockey contract, they basically have to say ESPN at all times.
That's good.
It's kind of genius,
right? That's a good guerrilla marketing campaign there.
And then we have, you know, you grab the Connecticut teams, then they're playing there. They're playing at the ESPN Dome. You get the Celtics to give one home game a year to bring them back to Hartford for like they used to back in the Bird days. They're playing at the ESPN Dome.
There you go.
This would work. This is how I would like to see the company spend money.
I'll go further. I'm more than willing to be the Magic Johnson-like figurehead to be the front of the Hartford ESPN group. I don't have $2 billion either, but I will go as high as $1,000 of my own money to bring back the Hartford ESPNs.
That might be more than Magic put into by the Dodgers.
Absolutely. And I want to be like Steinbrenner, who put up like $40 to buy the Yankees in 1973 and somehow took over the team, so that's my goal.
I was told by somebody that I trust who I asked, like, I said, Jay-Z, like, what, he owns like 1% of the Nets, right? Like, there's no way he owns more than that. And this person shook their head, as in, no, he doesn't even own 1%
of
the Nets. Yeah. I think he put in like $5 and they gave him season tickets. But he has like a huge impact for them.
Totally. He probably can recruit NBA players. They all love Jay-Z.
That part hasn't really worked so far. But
well, true.
He shaped the stadium, though. I don't know if you read about the vault.
I have read about their stadium, yes.
Pretty cool idea. You just basically, you make it the Soho House of NBA stadiums.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Only a couple people can get in, and then everybody wants to get in because you're cool if you get in, basically.
Right.
It's a nice little Jedi mind trick.
The velvet rope at the gates.
Yeah, it's going to be the biggest scandal since the Ewing lottery when New Jersey wins the NBA lottery.
Anthony Davis, absolutely.
Oh, it's a lock. You can put it down. I'm going to bet on it. I'm actually going to put money on it.
I read where Barkley said that last week, so.
Yeah, it's a lock because, you know, they thought maybe New Orleans, you know, that would be funny if New Orleans, they rigged the lottery for New Orleans, but New Orleans just sold. So yeah. if you just go down the list of who needs them to win the lottery the most, it's clearly Brooklyn. Because then Darren Williams would come back, and then you have Darren Williams and Anthony Davis. They could Brooke Lopez. They could sign a free agent.
Yeah, you know. They need to make them. Something going on there. They need to have them be successful.
Well, the one thing that they will definitely own the internet, because 68% of the blogosphere lives in Brooklyn.
That's true. The Brooklyn hipsters. The Brooklyn hipsters will be the most popular team in the NBA.
87% of all sports bloggers live in Brooklyn. So it will definitely be a team that will be covered. I don't know what they're going to do at the press box.
It would be good for Brooklyn to have a success after they lost the Dodgers 60-odd years ago. You know, that would be good. Good for Brooklyn.
Well, tell us what TV shows you're watching.
Well, we just finished watching Justified, which is the best show ever. We love
you
Justified.
Love
Timothy Olyphant. Was not as good as Season 2, but Season 3 was very good.
Season 2 is the iconic season, right?
It was great. It was so good. It just had everything you'd want, just great acting and a great storyline. This year was good, too. But not quite as good as Season 2. And I watched Mad Men, but I did not watch last night's Mad Men. I was tired from the aforementioned yard work, so I couldn't make it up after 10 o'clock. So I did not watch it. I DVR'd it. But, yeah, I've been watching Mad Men. A little slow getting out of the gate this year, Mad Men, I think. But
well, they did the two-hour premiere show, which was really two episodes back-to-back, which I don't agree with. Because Mad Men, to me, is like it's like a really rich steak.
Yeah. You want to enjoy it?
You don't want to have, like, the 45-ounce filet mignon because you're just going to get sick. But you get the nice little cut. That's Mad Men. You know, I don't need the 45-ounce Mad Men. Just give me like the nice 8-ouncer with some sauce and a couple of side vegetables. I'm happy. You know, HBO premiered that show Girls last night.
Yeah,
I don't know if you watched
that one.
I thought it was excellent.
Really, I saw it work. Got good reviews.
It was really good. I was prepared not to like it because the reviews were good, and I like to go the other way sometimes.
Right.
In this case, I thought it was really good. I liked it a lot.
Oh, keep that in mind. I have HBO, so I'll check that out.
It's the first good HBO show, or at least the first HBO show half-hour show that I really liked.
I'll check that out.
I don't even know. First season of Entourage? It's going way back.
Yes.
Showtime? Nothing on there?
No. I'm not like a Game of Thrones person or whatever. That's like, Dungeons and Dragons. That doesn't interest me.
Once you added two kids to your
repertoire,
to your house, it feels like your TV watching has slipped and you're doing yard work. I don't really like where this has gone.
I'll tell you, it's a slippery slope. There's no question. Slippery slope. The kids will get to you.
Pretty soon you're going to not watch Yankee games.
Well, that's a bridge too far. You know, my wife put a little pink Yankees sweatshirt on her youngest daughter the other day.
Yeah.
And she promptly spit up on it.
That's a Red Sox fan.
That's a rough omen for the 2012 Yankees. I'm a little disappointed.
Red Sox fan.
Could be. My God. No, just bite your tongue. I'll be crestfallen.
I like it. This is a great weekend adder to the nation.
She doesn't know it yet, but she's a Yankee fan and a Republican. She knows what's good for her. If she wants to someday inherit the Hartford ESPNs from me, she knows what's good for her. She'll be a Republican who roots for the Yankees.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go on RedSox.com and I'm going to buy her a $750 brick at the Fenway Wall. Well, how much are those up for now?
That's good.
$900?
That's good, because I'm going to fly to Los Angeles and throw it through your window.
what was the actual cost for those? $250?
It was like $150 or $250, I think.
Oh, my Lord. All right. Here's the best part of the podcast right now.
All right.
Defend Derek Jeter's offensive start without me making a Kobe Germany joke.
I don't know. That's too reliant on what you do. Derek's been great since the second half of last year. I call him Derek like we're old friends. He's been great since the second half of last year. He went down to Florida after he got hurt, worked with Yankees hitting guru Gary Denbow, and he's been on fire ever since. Fast out of the gate.
Yankees hitting guru Gary Denbow?
Yeah, he was. He used to be the Yankees hitting coach, and he was in their minor league. I think he's like one of their minor league instructors, and all these Yankees swear by him. You know, he was Jeter's hitting coach all through the minors when he was growing up, and it's like a swing coach for a golfer. They go back and see the old college golf coach. It was when it was on that HBO documentary about his 3,000 quest for 3,000 hits. He was featured prominently in that.
You know, they should do a documentary about that documentary, because now that Minka Kelly is with Wilmer Valderrama,
yeah,
it needs a sequel.
I think if you buy the DVD of it now, I think actually she's excised from it. All her scenes have been cut, edited.
Jeter's gained 27 pounds of muscle. Minka's dating Wilmer Valderrama. I need a sequel.
Come on, 27 pounds of muscle. Give me a break.
Yeah, he's a little bigger. He's a little bigger.
I mean, okay. You want to talk about guys that are oddly doing well. Let's talk about Big Poppy's start to the year.
Oh,
notorious slow starter.
Same start he's had every year, Johnny. Same start he's had every year. He's moved up his timetable.
Apparently. Must have been hard to get his mail in Toronto when he was in another country, but now that he's home in Boston, there must be the home cooking.
Jeters. It's going to be so sad when he gets brought down.
Outrage. Blasphemy.
I heard Lester Munson and Don Yeager have been following the Yankees, just waiting this spring.
Blasphemy. Outrageous.
How are you feeling about Cousin Sal and I finally belatedly winning our Mitt Romney bet?
I'm excited for you. That's good.
It's pretty good. We had to sweat that one out, Johnny.
It's good. I went and saw Mitt last week, actually. He was here in Hartford, and I walked over in my lunch hour and watched him speak for 10 minutes.
How was that for you?
It's good. He's good looking in real life. He's very tan.
Handsome. Handsome son.
Handsome fellow, very tan. I was like, wow, Mitt, you look good. I was part of an overflow crowd that actually couldn't get into his event, but he stood on a chair and gave a speech, and I was about 20 feet away from him.
Overflow crowd?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was. I don't think it was wild-eyed enthusiasm for Mitt here in Connecticut. It was that he was speaking in a small area. I'm not going to lie.
All right, Johnny.
All right.
So, doesn't sound like you're that worried about really anything right now.
No, I'm good. I'm worried about the yard, yeah. Other than that, I'm good.
Anyone in the AL you're worried about?
The Rangers look scrappy. They're like 8-3. I'm worried about the Tigers, although they've, I think, leveled off a little bit. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. I was worried about the Rays, but the Red Sox have manhandled them, so maybe I'm not so worried about the Rays.
I'm still worried about the Rays. I agree. I think the Rangers are the team that because, you know what, it looks like Hamilton is just going to have the FU contract year, which
yeah.
I wish I had known during my fantasy draft. But when Yu Darvish is, like, your biggest problem through a week and a half, that's not good. That's not good for the rest of the American League.
Right, if that's all you have to worry about.
Because the worst-case scenario for him is, you know, he'll throw 180 innings and have a 4.5 ERA or whatever.
Right.
But it's still not going to kill them. They're so deep anyway. But yeah, that's the team that jumps out for me, because if Hamilton's going to hit, then, you know, and Andrews hasn't even started hitting yet.
Right.
I think he's been on base like 5 times. So
yeah, they look good already. They play the Red Sox. That'll be an interesting series starting tomorrow.
Interesting, and how would you define interesting?
Well, interesting to see if this Red Sox resurgence is for real. You know, see how they're at home where they have an advantage. And the Rangers are a good team, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, if the Rangers come in and win 3 out of 3, then you say, well, the Red Sox were who we thought they were. But if the Sox ever take 2 out of 3 or something, you'd be like, hey, the Sox, maybe this is the FU Bobby Valentine year, and don't count us out, you know?
Well, they're losing 1-0 in the top of the ninth right now. I think the only thing we know for sure about the Rangers-Red Sox series is that Bobby V will jump at the chance to get involved with some sort of Yu Darvish something. Whether it's a picture, a Japanese interview.
Yeah.
There's going to be some arms put around shoulders, some joshing.
Oh, yeah, no question. Probably in Japanese.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I'll say, let me give you the over-under for Bobby V. I'm going to say August 2nd. Would you go over or under?
Well, you know what it might be like? It might be like when Barry Melrose came back to coach the Lightning after a long time in the booth, and he came back, and didn't he get unceremoniously dispatched from that job pretty quickly?
Yeah, wasn't it like 3 weeks?
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be quite that quick for Bobby V, because Lucchino's in his corner, and they need a manager, and there's not anybody else out there that they're eager for. But, you know, you get rid of Bobby V, and then what do? Bring in Dale Swaim? You know?
Isn't he already managing?
Probably. Maybe.
All right, so your 1% ownership stake in the Hartford ESPNs is
yes.
at stake. And I'm giving you the over-under of August 2nd.
He'll be there. I don't think he manages a second year in Boston, but I think he'll manage out this year. Unless he pulls like some health thing, I'm burned out, has some just mental breakdown or something. But I don't think he's the type to do that. So I'll say he manages the whole year. I'll go the over.
I hadn't thought of your Bobby Melrose scenario.
Barry Melrose.
Barry Melrose, son yes. of my dad. I hadn't thought of your Barry Melrose scenario. That worries me.
The things look a lot better from the broadcast booth, I think, than actually being there in the hot seat. He may start to look more longingly at the broadcast booth.
What would you put for the Vegas odds of Bobby V and Terry Francona being reunited on the ESPN Studio show?
Well, you know what could be interesting is all these fans now have found a newfound love for Terry Francona. What if they did like the Yankees with Bob Lemon and Billy Martin when they had the All-Star game and
yeah.
they announced our manager for 1979, Billy Martin.
Now, that'd
Rod
be
went
fun.
Crazy. Imagine if they did that.
That'd be fun. The only thing with that is he wouldn't even come back for the 100th anniversary.
Yeah, exactly. They'd have to have Larry Lucchino's head on a pike or something before he'd agree to do that.
By the way, how terrible is that? I mean, how badly could you have botched that relationship that the guy who brings you the two World Series, the only two World Series you've won basically since in the last 95 years,
mm-hmm.
and he's alive.
Yeah.
He's fully confident, fully capable of being able to get in a plane or a car and make it to Fenway, and is so disgusted by your team that he doesn't show up. That's pretty sad.
And then Lucchino got mad at him. They got in like a fight because Terry Francona wouldn't come back. I mean, how crazy is he that he would think, Lucchino that is, how crazy is he that he thinks, oh, we smeared you on the way out the door, haven't talked to you in 5 months, ran you out of town. Hey, can you come back and do us a favor for the 100th anniversary of Fenway? And then when you say no, which any rational human would say, and
right.
then you fly off the handle about it. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not great, Johnny.
It is. No, I disagree. It is great.
It's not great. Can't one of the Steinbrenner sons do something dumb? Does it have to be the Red Sox doing all this stuff?
Well, don't give it time. Don't worry.
All right, Johnny.
All right, buddy.
We'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
All right, switching over to another one of my buddies. We're fierce rivals right now, Capitals Bruins, facing off in the hockey playoffs. House, how you feeling?
Oh, Billy.
Oh, no. You give me that?
Billy, are you worried yet?
A little worried.
I mean, worried. Have you watched these two games?
I don't like no-name goalies who haven't been heard from until like about 4 weeks ago who show up. And the Bruins have like a really bad history with this. Makes me
nervous. I think it's not just the Bruins. There's kind of a history for this. It's a little bit precedented. It's not completely unprecedented. That
no, definitely not.
A guy comes out of nowhere, comes in hot, doesn't have any reason to feel pressure, isn't nervous,
right.
and just
dumb and
plays
happy.
Out of his mind.
Yeah, you don't want dumb and happy for goalies. It's not good. But the bigger thing is, it just seems like the Capitals won every faceoff. I don't like having the team that doesn't win faceoffs. I don't know what the stats were, but it just seemed like over and over again.
Yeah, I don't know what the stats were either. The thing that is most encouraging to me as a Washington fan is the physical presence that this team has showed up with for these playoffs. Completely out of the blue, honestly. I mean, we saw kind of bits and pieces of it throughout the season. The whole season, maybe in retrospect, was one of transition where they're going from that highly skilled offense identity into an identity that's really more playoff worthy. But
yeah.
Holy cow, this physical team is something that I don't know the last time I've seen a Washington team that's physical.
It's been a great playoffs. I've thoroughly, and maybe I don't know whether I'm thoroughly enjoying it more because I actually followed this regular season, so I have a feel for a lot of the teams and the storyline, stuff like that. But holy mackerel, we were trying to do that Grantland live chat yesterday, and the Pens Flyers game was, I mean, it wasn't just a typical hockey game with a lot of fights. Like it was kind
no.
of, it was a vicious game. Like I really
it was
felt
personal.
Like, Yeah, it really feels like the police personal. Might need to get involved with the series.
I mean, the thing is, you have two TVs, so you could have it on simultaneously.
Yeah.
I hope I don't get in trouble for this. I was off the basketball and on hockey quite a bit.
I knew. I could tell. You were flipping during time. Well, I was doing the same thing.
The hockey game was crazy.
It was crazy, and it really felt like there was going to be an assault and battery.
It really did.
And actually, honestly, I think there was. I think the cross check to the Adam's apple might have been some sort of crime.
I agree. I mean, you know, they never come away with it. You rarely see the criminal charges, but they look like criminal behavior to me.
This is the fifth playoffs that I've thrown myself into, but I pay much more attention this year in general. But it just seems like this is a much more violent playoffs. And I don't know whether that's because
they feel electric to me. Like there are no games that I'm not, no series that I'm not interested in. I honestly watched some of New Jersey, Florida last night.
I know. I watched that too before I went to the Kings game.
So how was that Kings game live?
It was great, except for, you know, it felt like one of those games that the Canucks, you just assumed that they were going to put it together and win. They dominated the game. In the second period, they had all the penalties against them, and the Kings never took advantage. And then, you know, between the second and third period, the mood in the arena was just like,
By the way, that's what it's like in Washington most of the time.
Right. It just felt like the Canucks were better. And then the Kings get that crazy goal. You know, Brown got knocked down, and they forgot to check him. And then all of a sudden he's standing in front of the net. And for the last 10 minutes, it just felt like the Canucks had the puck the entire time.
Yeah, I know.
And they
just why hockey's so good.
Couldn't get it done. They do miss, you know, the Sedin twin thing made them special. It's almost impossible for those guys not to at least produce one goal per game when they're out there. And, you know, just from watching them last year against the Bruins versus watching this year's team, they don't feel as powerful.
No, I agree.
They don't feel as potent. But, you know, when you change your goalie after two games, that's not a good sign in general.
I know. I'm there with you.
It's actually like it's similar to the Miami Heat thing. Like if you're messing around with your rotation a week before the playoffs and you don't know who your nine guys are, that's not a good sign either.
I still like Miami. Not.
Yeah, why? Explain yourself.
I just think, you know, in the playoffs, talent wins. I like to make the playoffs as simple as possible. I think the Heat are going to the finals again.
I don't think you can win them with two guys anymore.
I just don't think
Bosch played better yesterday.
And there's anybody in the East that, I mean, honestly, and I hate to appear to be drinking the Kool-Aid, Boston's the only team that looks to me like is going to give Miami any kind of hustle at all. I don't believe in Chicago one bit. I know Chicago beat their butts last week and in that overtime game, but I just don't believe in them.
Well, I'm going to be interested to see if Chicago has an extra gear. Because it really does seem like of all the regular season teams, it seems like they try the hardest.
Yep.
It doesn't matter who's missing or whatever's going on. But
Maybe that's the thing, right? Maybe that's what's making that will distinguish this Chicago team from last year's. The extended run and the success they've had without Derrick Rose, maybe him being healthy and playing, you know, all playoffs, that he'll be the extra gear.
Yeah. Worries me as a Celts fan is the weakness on this team is the rebounding and protecting the rim and not getting killed on offensive boards, stuff like that. And
that makes Chicago
team,
a bad matchup for you.
It does. On one respect, yes. But on the other respect, if you only have to worry about Derrick Rose in the last 5 minutes of a game, I think the Celtics team can shut that down pretty easily.
Yeah. And it's going to be fascinating. You know what I have in front of me right now, by the way? I haven't finished going through it. Our closest to the pin thing.
Yeah, it's pretty
close,
right?
For wins.
Yeah.
It's very close. I still have – the only way to tabulate this is to sit and listen to the podcast.
No, I have it. I had one of our interns do it. I have all the info.
Thanks a lot.
Well,
when do I get to see it?
I was going to send it to you with like a week to go.
How much time is left?
We have 10 days to go. But here's the thing. The thing I'm most proud of is that we spent a lot of time in that podcast talking about how hard it would be for anybody to win 50 games.
Yep.
And this was at a time when the national media, because they love to exaggerate and do the hyperbole thing, everybody was wondering, like, can the Heat win 60 and all that crap?
Oh, my God.
And it was like, no. No, I think I even said I didn't think anybody – I don't think I picked anybody to win 50. I might have
neither one of us
one.
Did. I was just going to say neither one of us picked anybody to win 50. Although
it just seemed
I haven't
too
got to
improbable.
Oklahoma City yet. Did you pick Oklahoma City to get 50? I know I didn't.
I think I had them at 49.
Okay.
But,
that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, we had Memphis, I remember. I remember we were on – I think the one that we were the most off on was Boston. Or at least I was. I remember being way off on the Lakers and Boston.
No, I had Boston at 39 wins, and you had them at 37. So we were, you know, a little shy.
I went low on the Lakers, Spurs, and Celtics, thinking that this.
Yeah, you went low
gonna...
on the Lakers.
Man, listen, if I had known that Bynum was going to play a full season, I would have changed that pick.
What a revelation!
Play
he's been,
season.
By the way.
I know. What do I do with my All NBA ballot?
Oh, this is great.
We need to do another whole
discussion for that. But
I think that's a podcast. I should fill out the ballot as a podcast.
That I think that would be great.
Maybe we'll do that next week because it's really hard for me to accept that I have to vote Dwight Howard for first team.
Who says you have to?
Well, I mean, stats and just what he means on paper to that team and the fact that they're built around his ability to rebound and block shots and he's still getting his 2014 every game. And, you know, and anybody who's in the league would say that he's hands down the best center. But when
okay.
you throw in the,
I understand.
When you throw in the coach killing part and you throw in the erratic behavior and what we saw in person that night in Indiana where he just was totally detached, like, it's hard for me to accept that I have to vote for him.
No, I was impressed with him in Indiana. You weren't impressed with him?
I was impressed by how detached he was, yet how he was able to just compartmentalize everything and just play really well.
Yeah, okay. I'm with you. He killed him.
We killed him. I didn't feel like he connected with his teammates in any way.
Okay, all right.
We were talking about that.
I don't have any reason to argue with that.
It was like they were like all businessmen on a trip.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's a tough one, and you know.
He's still going to win the rebounding title. He played enough games and enough minutes.
Yeah.
Tough not to have him first team All-NBA.
And this MVP thing has turned into a worst-case scenario. There's nothing worse than nobody has really seized the reins. I mean, I guess I'd vote for LeBron at this point. I don't feel great about it. I'd love for Durant to kind of rip off maybe 40 points a game these last 2 weeks, and they get the one seed, and then that would make it a little bit easier.
Yep.
But I don't know if he's going to do that. I'm going to see him tonight against the Clips.
Oh, that's going to be good. Clips are still really playing for position, aren't they?
Yeah, but I mean, the Lakers keep winning these garbage games where it seems like they should be blowing the game, but then, you know, somehow something happens, they get a play, somebody misses it, all of a sudden they pull these out. They pulled out like 10 of those.
Well,
you gotta give him credit. It's part of.
You know, I was right there with you. What's crazy is these are depth wins. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're winning these games because of their depth versus the other team's starters.
The whole crappy supporting cast argument no longer holds weight because of the way Barnes and Artest are playing.
Both
of those guys are playing better.
The impact
and Sessions. Yeah, they have. When Kobe comes back, they'll have six guys that you know will at least show up for every game, and then McRoberts, maybe, I don't know. I mean, can he give them 12 minutes and then
break? Well, I guess the thing that I would say should be scary for the rest of the league is that Kobe from the bench is gaining trust in these guys.
Yeah.
Right?
It's true.
So in these crunch time moments.
The worst matchup for them is Oklahoma City. I don't think they can beat Oklahoma City. I just think they have the big guys to throw at. They're big guys. They're too fast. They get too many easy fast break points. I just don't think they can beat them. And I'd be shocked if they beat them in a series. I feel like somebody in Oklahoma City would have to get hurt. But I think they could beat every other team in the West.
Me too. The Spurs, I think, would be fascinating.
Yeah, he's had a pretty good history against them, Kobe.
Yeah.
And they also, the thing with the Spurs, like that Bynum game, there's got to be something to be gleaned from that. 30
That's
rebounds.
That's true.
They just, more I see that, the Spurs do seem to have trouble protecting the rim sometimes, which is a bad quality for a team that's supposed to be a contender. But
well, and right, a bad matchup for a team with the two of the five best seven-footers in the league.
What about, I mean, I would say the NHL is more compelling right now. You've knocked out the two favorites.
It's the playoffs.
No, but I mean, we've knocked out the two Vegas favorites were Pittsburgh in the East and then Vancouver in the West, and they're both on their way out.
That's why hockey is the best.
It's,
I mean, I love basketball, and it's playoffs for everything, but they're rarely this unpredictable. Hockey is always this unpredictable.
I remember looking at the series when we were doing our mega podcast last week, and the series prices, mm-hmm. and like nobody was over 250 because
yeah,
they
right.
know
that
Vegas
tells you
knows.
Something.
Vegas knows that that weird stuff can happen, but come on, though. Vancouver and Pittsburgh going 0-6 has to be one of the weirdest things that's ever happened in the NHL playoffs.
That would have been one to wager on. Just $10.
I will say, just as a Bruins fan, this Flyers team is kind of scary. They just seem...
Yeah, the thing I'm hoping for, you know, if the Caps manage to hang in there against the Bruins, you're hoping that... the Flyers come out of this exhausted. That they,
beaten
that,
up.
You know, this war takes a toll on them.
You
but
think.
If they win on, when's the next one? Wednesday? And the series is over, and Washington and Boston are still playing.
I can't remember the last time I've been more excited for the handshake line.
Maybe. They have to do the handshake
line. It'd have to go back to, like, Avalanche Red Wings back in the late 90s for, like, a handshake line where you'd be watching the handshake line thinking that there might be a sucker punch. It's gotten to that level.
Yeah, it really has.
It's insane. What's funny is that the East is so much more physical than the West. Like, even this Vancouver got chippy with the Kings yesterday. The poor Kings. The Kings just, please, they just don't want to fight. They don't want to
knock
anyone
around. Yeah, they don't have anybody, do they?
They don't have anybody. The Burrows jumped Kopitar yesterday, who's like a Lady Bing finalist. He didn't know what to do. He just kind of grabbed them and held on. But, you know, and then, like, of course, none of the Kings went and defended him later.
That was my question. Nobody did anything, did they?
No, they need that one guy, who is the guy? Shea Walsh? Is that his name? Who is the guy who slammed the Red Wings head against the boards?
Oh, yeah.
That guy.
I don't know.
They need a guy like that. Whatever that guy's name is.
Weber.
Shea Weber. That's it. It was blanking. They need that guy. They need the guy, the defenseman who just randomly would slam somebody's head against the boards or whatever.
It is weird that there isn't one of those guys. Those guys exist. There's a ton of them in the league. It's weird that the Kings don't have one.
Well, they're missing two because they also don't technically... Ah, the Red Sox just lost. There it is. Joe Mead, I was dragging along the podcast to get so we'd get a Red Sox final. Called third strike into the game.
1-0?
1-0 final. But, yeah, you know, if you're building a playoff team, you need the pest. And Mech Richards is technically a pest, but he's almost like overqualified because he's probably the most reliable two-way king.
Right.
And then you need that one defenseman who is just the guy who just cross-checks people from behind in front of the net and defend. And they don't have that guy.
No, they do not have that guy.
You need those guys. But anyway. So, yeah, Caps Bruins. When's that? Tonight or tomorrow night?
Tonight, 7:30. What do you mean, when is that? It's tonight.
Tonight. Well, I can't keep track. There's 40,000 games going on.
Your team. I'll be there, by the way.
You're going.
I may or may not be rocking the red.
You're going. Don't bring your son.
That's what we do here. My son is not coming with me, believe me.
Bring your son.
This is no environment for children.
The loudest any sort of event, human event you can have.
How did your daughter handle it?
She loves it, but my son, it was a one time and out for him. The horn was it for him. He did not like the horn.
I know.
A little too loud for him.
A little too loud.
But, yeah, all right. Well, we'll see you tonight. Hopefully it'll be a nice physical affair.
One thing that's interesting, it's really warm here in Washington. It's like over 80 degrees. I wonder if they'll be able, the ice might be soft Could be even more physical. Could be even slower.
We had a little soft ice yesterday in the Canucks, Canucks-Kings game because the basketball game ended like three hours before. And the guys in the first period kept falling in the middle of the ice. It seemed
we'll
a little dangerous.
For that tonight, too.
All right, House. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep, see you.
So I get to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.